This is Gaten the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it.
Welcome back to Gaten the Mecha. I'm your host Jamal today, and in today's episode we are going to be speaking about nostalgia. In today's episode, I really want to cover my opinion on nostalgia and how that judges or how that changes my judgment, on anime and a few other things. I think nostalgia is a concept which I've been hearing about more and more lately, and it seems to be a rather one-sided response, and so I kind of want to add to that conversation and potentially add a bit of difference to the pool of opinions that already exists. If you do enjoy this episode, it would be lovely if you left it a review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere where you can leave reviews. Really helps other people find the show. And speaking of the show, let's get into it. Here's episode 63 of Gaten the Mecha, The Value of Nostalgia. As always on Gaten the Mecha, I like to give you my alerts in case there are spoilers or anything of that nature, and in this episode there shouldn't be any spoilers for this or for the anime which I'm discussing. It's really going to be a more general discussion rather than talking about the plot in particular, talking about nostalgia and judgment and those things instead. As I said, in this episode I want to discuss nostalgia and how it affects my judgment and how I implement it and compensate blah 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 when it comes to it. And in order to do that, there's quite a bit of analytical baggage or quite a bit of context which I need to get into. As you know, I watch quite a bit of anime, maybe not as much as, say, other people, but I watch a decent amount of anime. I've watched a couple hundred anime, so I think that's fair to say, and most of which are considered my favorites, whether that's Perfect Blue, The Millennium Actress, March Comes in Like a Lion, Neon Genesis Evangelion, Monogatari series, those things. The thing about that is they often are viewed to have quite a lot of analytical baggage which come with them innately. You can see that on social media and a bunch of other places too. But this isn't to say that they're on anime which I would say have a bit less of that baggage attached to them that I enjoy. And a good example of this would be Ao no Exorcist or Fate Grand Order, Absolute Demonic from Babylonia, or even Fire Force, an anime which I'm very keen on when it comes to the production side, or I'm very interested within it because there are so many great stuff on this anime and they do a lot of great things really, and so I do enjoy those just as much. And I'll go kind of deeper into my reasoning as to why I like these. I'm not saying that okay, you must like an anime with analytical quote-unquote baggage or something which is widely analyzed as opposed to an anime which isn't widely analyzed. That isn't really the point. In order to give a bit more context into the situation, I need to talk about my anime journey. Hopefully, if you listened to my Buildcasters interview, you might have heard about my sort of abridged version of the anime journey. And so I'll kind of repeat that and add more of the details when it comes to it. So about, I don't know, five years back, it was back in secondary school, I got into manga. I went into a bookstore confidently and bought the first three-in-one Naruto volumes. And I do not regret that whatsoever. I still have those manga today. But then we fast forward to about the summer of, if I'm correct, 2018, if not 2017. The bored me had just finished Naruto Shippuden. I am going to come clean and say that I skipped, not because, I didn't enjoy it. I would just, this was a time where I didn't have much knowledge as to chronology and stuff like that, even though I should have had the knowledge. But this was a time where I skipped most of what is considered Naruto Part 1. So Naruto that isn't Shippuden. I skipped almost most of that, about two-thirds of it, and I just started watching Shippuden because I was like, this looks interesting, I want to see it, and they look grown up. So I watched Naruto Shippuden back then, and I finished in the summer of 2018 or 2017, I believe. After that, I was really desperate to find something that was very similar to an anime like this. Usually when you do finish your first anime, you kind of look for something to fill the void or is very similar, versus now I'm kind of looking for variety, or I'm looking for a specific genre. Like right now I'm searching for harem anime, whereas back then I'll be searching for something that's battle shonen-esque or within a similar formula to Naruto, because I want something similar to sort of meet my expectations. I thought this approach would be much easier, and so I started watching Fullmetal Alchemist, the original, and then I failed about 4 episodes in. Not because I didn't enjoy it, I thought it was decent from what I watched, but it really wasn't me, and I just didn't get the same excitement that I did from Naruto Shippuden's opening arc. I think when you are early into your watching phases, because, and this kind of applies to the media anyway, because you are limited in what you know, you do tend to lean towards things that are similar. And also, your understanding of what an anime is still rather limited, I would say. I did think that a lot of anime, or the best anime, were these 100 episode sagas and, you know, the big names. However, as I started to watch more things, I started to dive into experimental films and a lot of other different types of anime and different forms of anime. I started to realize that form isn't really something that should be restrictive, and beauty can come out of anything from a 10 second short film to a 900 episode anime. But then came the day that I decided to watch the delightful 25 episode battle shonen Ao no Exorcist. To keep it simple, I really loved it, and I still like it a lot today. Everything from the team format to most of the characters, no, pretty much all of the characters. It was also good for me to sort of ease out of the Naruto formula by trying something similar but different. We had the team concept, and the team is the character which is driving the entire narrative, or most of it, as well as the power system and such. It did have some semblance or resemblance to Naruto, not particularly inspired or anything, I don't know about those details, but the fact that there was some sort of proximity between the ideas meant that was a really good way to ease out of it. But what is of real value here is that this was the time when I truly can say that I fell in love with late 2000s and early 2010s anime. I have finally found my nostalgia period. Everything from the actual anime itself to the formatting and the bands which would usually sing on the OPs, and even the way I would watch it and how it was encoded, da da da, which would be the classic 480p on my tablet sort of thing, chilling at 9 p.m. after the day's over. Maybe that just sort of proves how zoomer I am, and I'm kind of okay with that, I've accepted it, it is what it is. But I think that's partially because, and just to add a bit more context, anime growing up wasn't really a big thing for me. Not because, oh, I opted out or I kind of didn't know it existed. Obviously, I didn't really know the name and the history and the culture behind it. But besides those very basic things that managed to penetrate the West, whether that's Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Pokemon or Bakugan, besides that, anime and those things weren't really a big thing on TV, or at least the TV I was watching then. I'm definitely not one of those people that grew up on Toonami and such, and I kind of see that as a bit of a blessing, only because I think it's better to start by filtering what you like and choosing something that I think works for you initially, as opposed to having a channel curate a certain amount of anime, and when you are new with that limited view, it does become a bit hard to transition out of that personally. But that is why I have this self-made nostalgia age, or this nostalgic age for me. I do think sometimes the idea of nostalgia right now, because of the current age group that watches anime, which seems to be, from in my head, it seems to be, and this isn't like an official fact, this is just from browsing social media, etc. But I would say it's about late teens, mid to late teens, all the way to about, I don't know, 30 or something like that, but that's not an official stat or anything. But because of that generation existing, most of the Conquered nostalgia comes from the 90s anime or the very early 2000s anime. And although I do appreciate those works and I do love the works from the 90s and the 80s and the early 2000s, this isn't to say that I can't have nostalgia that exists out of that very thing. My nostalgia doesn't come from me as a child, it comes from me being early to anime or my first and early experiences with this meta or medium. And now with that out of the way, let's discuss really how does nostalgia affect judgment? Because I've explained the nostalgic components of my anime experience and anime journey, I think it's important to then sort of put that into our formula as to how does that affect me now, as opposed to just how it affected me then, even though you wouldn't know that nostalgia is affecting you then, or you wouldn't really acknowledge its presence because it doesn't exist then. Nostalgia takes time to form, and the piece needs to resonate over time, and that's how we form, and that's how nostalgia sort of crystallizes. I think maybe if you've been listening closely to my language, I'm actually rather sort of pro-nostalgia, as opposed to some of the arguments that would suggest that nostalgia is hindering our judgment or potentially making our judgment worse. And my favorite one, which I absolutely hate, is, not really hate, but I just dislike it quite a lot, that is the, you're looking at it with the rose-tinted glasses. I can't get enough of that one. Using nostalgic feelings to judge a work, I think, is often looked down on or criticized because of what I said. It's an attempt to be, quote unquote, objective with our judgment and suggest that we must give these very fair views as to how you feel about a piece of media. But do note the word feel, and remember that the media or responding to the media is an emotional response. The critique of nostalgia kind of bases itself on not including bias within one's judgment of a piece of art or media because of the fact that it doesn't take into context the landscape of today and the attitude to one's piece of work today. And I do want to say that I'm avoiding suggesting that one should continuously like a piece of work. I don't think that if you liked Pokemon back in your childhood and you hate it today, you really dislike it today, that you should continue to like it because you're simply somewhat nostalgic about it. But I think there is a value within nostalgic judgments, or at least maintaining that element of nostalgia within you if you genuinely enjoy this piece and you still do, even if it was 5 or 10 years ago. As I said, this comes from a place of wanting to be quote-unquote objective about one's judgments. However, this is where my counter-arguments come in, or this is where I disagree with it. Personally, I think attempting to be objective about art, similarly to kind of what I said in the Mecha is Dead episode and some former episodes before that, I think is rather counterintuitive, or that idea falls apart very quickly when one acknowledges that our judgments were never rational to begin with. When we make a choice in regards to a piece of art and our understanding of it, or not really understanding, but our emotional response to it and packaging that and giving our thoughts on it, that isn't a rational thing. We're not using logic to determine how we feel about art. We're talking about this from the perspective of feelings. What emotions did it make us evoke? And obviously we're not saying, okay, it made me happy, it made me sad, it made me angry, although you might say that. But that is often packaged into something like a review or some basic discourse on the subject, and that is all emotional rather than rational. Just to bring a bit of philosophy into this, because I do love a bit of philosophy here and there, this does remind me of something which I was reading by Peter Singer, which was his Hegel, A Very Short Introduction, I do believe, and he discusses what Hegel thinks about freedom, and the part that really resonated with me was the fact that in order to get to freedom, and so we must acknowledge that choices were never rational to begin with, we make choices coerced by our desires and by the things which drive us, which as I said are desires, and so we don't really make rational decisions even when we are I think the reason why is that the term rational has become a lot more colloquial. When we say think rationally, we don't necessarily mean think rationally is philosophical context per se, but when we say think rationally, we mean think in a more sensible way. Consider the stakes and everything which is going on and how this will affect your environment around you. And that's kind of what we mean today when we say rational. But I think even so, imposing the term rational upon art just appears really weird and sus to me. If I use myself as an example, I'll briefly explain why I enjoy an anime like Aeon Exorcist and why I maintain those nostalgic feelings towards it. The sort of abstract to my explanation will really be that I keep those nostalgic feelings and I remember those and I treasure them is because they made me feel those in the first place. And I think that's the good thing about using nostalgia and embracing it, the fact that it made you, or it was able to make you feel happy or make you evoke said emotion initially. And that obviously is telling for the power of media. And if we are to simply ditch those things which we once had, or at least throw them in the sand and say that, oh no, I can't have evoked emotion when I was a kid, that couldn't have been right. How dare I? I think we potentially even run into undermining the value, or at least the power, of a piece of media in the first place. As previously said, Aeon Exorcist introduced me to this team dynamic, one which I was never used to. Yes, Naruto Shippuden did have a quote-unquote team, but the dependency and almost centralization of the team in the narrative was limited, as opposed to Aeon Exorcist, which depended almost entirely on the team and the health of the team and the health of their relationship in order for this narrative to function and progress. When this breaks down, it's a critical point. We saw it in my Illuminati arc episode. I won't go into the details, but when the team does get split up and when we do have these difficult situations, that is when the health of the team is challenged and we have to really confront that. The fact that Aeon Exorcist initially was able to blow my mind and give me a completely new experience when it came to this meta or medium is an achievement in itself, and one I think should be celebrated. It made an amazing impression on me, and that is why I judge it rather highly. This is a similar feeling to how I felt when watching Tetsuo and Birdie Decode recently. Tetsuo and Birdie Decode has been a very... I didn't include it in last episode's lockdown picks because I did watch quite a lot of anime in the lockdown, or at least at the height of the lockdown, and so I couldn't really put everything in there. But Tetsuo and Birdie Decode is definitely up there for a variety of reasons, and it really brought back what I love about this nostalgic period which I'm discussing, whether that's the sponsor message, whether that's the 480p feeling that I would be watching it in, and a whole host of other things which I just really enjoyed. It was also a tool for me for understanding animation better, but that isn't really the focus of this episode. In relative to anime, I don't know if I can call it old. I don't really like when things are old, but old in anime is probably a lot bigger of a term than other media. If something's 10 years, quote unquote, old, it's not particularly old. It's just 10 years ago. And I think anime, usually, most of the time, I feel like it ages really well. And so when we do have something from quite far into the last decade or so, or even quite early into the 2000s or something, maybe we don't completely latch onto the term old. And I think that's partially because some people have negative connotations with the term old, when it isn't really a criticism, it's just relative to where we are in time. But even so, whether you consider it old or not, that isn't really the point. The point is that it didn't really limit my nostalgic feeling despite those things. The first reason why I have this personal value and nostalgia when it comes to Tetsuo and Birdie Decode, even though I did watch it recently, is because it reminds me of where I started and where I started this journey. Tetsuo and Birdie Decode came out at a similar sort of time in the, say, 7-year time span or 5-year time span that Aeon Exorcist came out in. And it really takes me back to those warm, exciting times where I'd be, not like I don't get excited about anime today, but I would be going home, rushing home almost, to bang out about 3 episodes of Tetsuo and Birdie Decode. Okay, not Tetsuo and Birdie Decode then, but an anime between the late 2000s and the early 2010s. And that would be like my driving force, really. This will be a time where I try out new anime, dig for new ones, and to add many to my very early anime list now, which is convoluted and turned into a let's not forget this anime list. But moving on, the second reason why it provides me some sort of value is because it reminds me of why I love anime. The previous point is slightly different, it's really where I started, but this one's really why I enjoy it so much. I think one of the reasons why I really got into the anime rabbit hole and got sucked in as hard as I am now is because I acknowledged and found out that there are so many stories to tell, and way more than I thought that there could be told, whether that's a bunch of teenagers traveling to Mesopotamia to fight three goddesses, or whether that's a tentacle girl and her slice of life adventures. There are too many stories to tell. Too many does sound negative, but I just mean there are so many and there's so much variety which comes out of this matter. But let me explain. In the case of Tetsu One Buddy Decode, it becomes a very emotional story that I didn't really think would become very emotional. And what you can define as an alien coming down to Earth and in the middle of her mission accidentally takes out a boy known as Stomo, and then they end up having this intertwined life, and it does get rather emotional as we discover the pasts and the lives and struggles of both characters. It becomes a powerful tale of two individuals from two separate lives living a combined life and learning things like cooperation, friendship, and maybe not in the cheesier way that I say it, but those things come together really nicely. And although I can't particularly personally resonate with an anime like this so much, I think these are values that anyone can take. These are universal values when it comes to this anime. What I fell in love with initially from Ao no Exorcist and recently Tetsu One Buddy Decode is the fact that even in unideal circumstances, they still try their hardest to make things work. And even if you do have your dad as Satan, or you do accidentally get taken out by a random alien who now is following you and freeloading in your body, life still goes on, and there's no real point in stopping, because stopping is giving in to defeat, and it's giving in to the unideal circumstance. And I think it's sort of a sign of weakness to some extent. And I think this is something I personally should be striving for, and I only realize it now, and that's what I would also say is valuable about nostalgia. The fact that these meanings and things have to settle and they have to crystallize means that over time we can think and reflect about how we feel about this. And similarly to if you're to brew some sort of alcohol, and over time it becomes more and more flavorful, if I can call it that, or even like aromatic, over time more beauty can come out of this. And I think when we look down on nostalgia and suggest that, okay, I gotta be objective about this, I got to put it through this mathematical meat grinder as to, okay, this is my scoring system and I have to judge as honestly and as rational as possible, we really do undermine those emotional responses and those things that we can take from an anime, because we're too busy trying to put things into a formula to work out that I'm rating an anime a 7.51, when really I think there could be a lot more focus upon developing those feelings over time and developing our thoughts and understanding as to what the piece entails. What I'm trying to get at is that I'm not necessarily saying we should consistently maintain the same emotional experiences we or I had when we were 14 or 5, or the experiences we had yesterday or today or even tomorrow, because these fluctuate, our emotions fluctuate, but I don't think that they should be used as this means of, or at least ditched for a means of being objective, because that isn't emotional. And that is what I think the media is. It's a culmination of emotions coming from the directors and the animators and the staff upon it. And I also think that it should be received emotionally. It isn't necessarily created rationally. It's fully subjective. And I think we should, or it should be receiving subjectivity back, if that sort of makes sense. The notion of looking at the media or anime as it is, I say in quotation marks, essentially implying that we should look at anime sort of dead on and, or what they refer to as dead on. The thing is, you can't look at it dead on because that isn't really within our capability and that isn't really how art functions. It's like putting a square peg into a circle hole. It doesn't really fit. And the reason why it doesn't fit is because we potentially ruin or miss out on what is so unique and fluid about art in the first place. This passion that is put into a work, and I'm not trying to say that people are actively disrespecting the work. I'm not getting into that particularly. I just mean from this judgment, we miss the energy, or we can miss the energy of the author, the creator, really, because it takes away that passion that is put in, that emotional encoding into the work of whether that's director Rei Matsumoto, whether that's Sungo Park, whether that is Masaki Yusa, that is all emotions put into their work, into or packaged and delivered to you, and to give it that stone cold feeling. Not to say, oh, one shouldn't be critical. There's a difference between being critical and being objective. To be critical is still to be subjective to some extent, or one's criticism is still subjective. But when you mask your criticism as objective and straight on, it does still, I think it still misses the point. And so that is why I'm positive about viewing art with the influence of emotion. It should really be what is driving you. And this is why I said in the What I Learned About Anime episode, is that I think it's much better to think about why you think this way. Or yeah, so for example, I'm watching something like Evangelion. I'll usually have this natural response that, okay, I like this show. And I'm not going to think about that too much. Until maybe a bit later, I'll think about, oh, why do I believe this? And then I'll dive into some elements about, oh yeah, I like said animator. Why do I like said animator? What do they do to make this animation interesting? And then that's how the analysis and discourse develops. But I don't think that giving it, putting the media in a box straight away really helps with the judgment or adds much value to the judgment even. Those biases, those nostalgic feelings, those emotions and emotional slants we have is what gives the media meaning. That is, in summary, the subjective nature of the media and the beauty of it. It's the fact that we all respond differently in terms of emotions, and nostalgia features into that. It's a feeling, and we feel as if we want to go back to that time because it resonated with us at that time and still has resonance with us today. For me, I think it's what makes animation and the media great isn't just meaning in the text. I think, yeah, we assume if we are to look at it like this that, okay, the meaning stops there and it's in there. We extract it from it and we look at it only based on what is there. But meaning doesn't particularly work like that for the media. It works based on the value we give it. And that is where nostalgia comes in. Nostalgia is attributing a value, some sort of temporal value and temporal resonance, which comes with a text, suggesting we have to see media for quote-unquote what it is, and abandon or set aside our nostalgic feelings really ignores an entire component of anime or the media, which is the varied emotional responses which come with it. The value which comes with a nostalgic response to a piece of media or art or anime is that it's pretty much a purely emotional response. At least for me, when anime was a thing by itself and it didn't really come with the social media or podcasting component, although I do like interacting on social media and talking on the podcast every week, but I wasn't diluted by these other opinions and so, and I could my opinions weren't diluted by this fact that I had to think about media as quote-unquote honestly as possible. When I was watching Eon of Exorcist, I didn't have the person creeping into my ear suggesting that this anime is mid, whatever mid really means. I really do hate that word, but I didn't have that influence there. And so it was, for me, I would say the closest thing I've had to a pure emotional response, as opposed to one which is diluted by other feelings. That is the only bias I'll say that exists, rather than the quote-unquote, oh yeah, I'm just being biased because it's nostalgic. Yes, be biased because you're nostalgic. Embrace those feelings. I think as the analysis of anime has quote-unquote progressed, I don't really mean this as value progressing positively or is a positive addition to the value necessarily, but I do mean that because the landscape has changed and there are more fans of anime now than say before, I think that has come with giving nostalgia a bit of a dirty look and suggesting that I can't be enjoying, or at least I can't be looking at this with my nostalgia goggles or whatever those are. And maybe it is me being a contrarian, but I don't think we should throw away emotions for the sake of throwing away emotions, because the emotions are the heart of the media to begin with. The fact that we're able to feel nostalgic about a piece of art goes to show its power, and it really and truly shows the influence it has on us as individuals. And with that being said, that is the analysis for this week. Hopefully you did enjoy it. It was a bit more of a general one as opposed to, you know, one that I don't know if I can call it a deep dive, but I really wanted to add to this conversation because I've been hearing a lot of other conversations about this and I disagree. So I wanted to put in my thoughts as well as to nostalgic feelings. And now let's go to the In the Moment segment and talk about something which I have been watching briefly. If you are new to the podcast or just the In the Moment segment, because who knows, maybe you didn't make it this far, all I do is I talk about one anime or manga which I've been watching or reading lately. In today's episode, or this version within the moment segment, I'll be talking about Isekai, and I'm very unsure because I'll be honest, yes, I am a podcast and yes, I should remember my content, but I think other creators will know that as you progress, and this podcast is still early and young, I would say it's just about a year old, but you do start to forget where certain episodes are and what you spoke about specifically in certain episodes, and that's kind of happened with me. I don't particularly remember if I've spoken about Isekai already, but regardless, I have been progressing on the anime and I'm really enjoying it. You can see it in my tweets. I tweeted something, today is Wednesday when this is being recorded, and I tweeted about it yesterday also. So on Tuesday I made a tweet about Isekai, and I also made one before that as well. And the point is, really, I just think there are so many valuable things to take away from this anime. I think that's to the level where I'm considering making a podcast on Isekai and the things you can get from it, not stuff like Easter eggs and references, that's not really something I dabble into that much, but really talking about how Yusa bends reality to a degree and also teaches us about the animation industry and what we can take from an anime like Isekai when it comes to understanding production and production values and what it takes to make an anime or animated piece of work. All three of the girls seem to have a very strong sort of role within the anime. They all have a very big stake within how the anime functions. Well, when I say the anime functions, I really mean how the anime which they make functions. But that is kind of what I mean when it comes to playing with reality. The fact that I had to specify that, because we have the anime, which is Isekai, and then we have the anime within the anime, which is also made in the same way which the anime is made to a degree. Obviously it's a TV anime and that makes it a bit more complicated because we have stuff like compositing, and I don't know to the level to which the Isekai team, the Isekai Concord team being Midori and Co, I don't necessarily know how much or if they do proper compositing, but there are some more features obviously on a TV anime, but it still gives us a lot of insight into the Japanese animation pipeline, and that's one which I don't think think, I don't mean this in the, I don't mean to like be on a high horse, I hope I don't sound like that, but in a community which does have quite a lot of misinformation, it is important that we do have some genuine information, and I think in the form of edutainment is a great way for people to learn about this stuff. Sure, there are blog posts and a few videos out there and some other things, but the misinformation still continues. We see it every day on social media, unfortunately, and I think edutainment is a really good way of educating people and getting them to understand this. And that's partially because the Japanese animation pipeline or process does vary from the Western ones quite a lot, or to a good level, when we think about things like often using animatics as opposed to a just literal paper storyboard, the importance of layouts and how that features into the production and why the layout is so important and probably the most important phase within Japanese anime production, because if that goes wrong, then that potentially affects the Genga, and then that affects the animation director's corrections in response to it, and it affects a lot of things versus when we say have an animatic which is already animated to some degree. I think coming up with an LO isn't as hard, but that's a lot of technical things that we don't really need to speak about. Basically, Isaacan is doing a really good job at educating me and hopefully educating other people really well when it comes to anime. And with that said, that is the In The Moment segment for this week. Just a brief one, really. I'm going to try and finish Isaacan soon, and even before that, I might end up doing a podcast on it because I really have a lot of points on that anime. With all of that done, let's go to closing thoughts and just wrap up my ideas on the value of nostalgia in this episode. When it comes to art, it's important to attack subjectivity with subjectivity. It's very valuable to, or just I think it's very important to not look at anime in this potentially objective way. I don't think we have the potential to do so anyway. I don't think that's something we're able to do. However, if you do insist, I do think one should switch to this subjective mode, because we miss out on the emotions which come with the anime, and we miss out on the emotional response that we should be giving it in the first place. Remember that this is an emotional response that is, or emotions which are encoded within to a piece of work from said directors, animators, storyboarders, etc. And to give it this stone cold look, I think misses out on the flexible and fluid nature of the media. The value of nostalgia for me is that it reminds me of where I started and why I love anime, but also it does tell us, or at least I think that is a very pure response. It's a really emotional and almost purely emotional response to the media we enjoyed back then. And I think if we are to have changes within our thoughts on an anime, that's perfectly fine, and I'm not critiquing that. However, I do think that the emotional slants and the biases and all of those things in combination should really be incorporated and not forgotten, since we are emotional beings and we should apply that very same energy and emotion to the medium or matter which we love. Thank you for listening to this episode of Guest in the Mecha. That has been episode 63. I will let you in on a secret and say that I honestly do forget the episode numbers, and I literally pause the episode, because I can do that since I'm recording solo. I pause the episode just to check my hosting service to see what episode we're on, because I thought I got it wrong, because I get it wrong most of the time. And so that's something that you guys will probably never actually hear, but what happens in the background. Be sure to check the iTunes store, go to or search Guest in the Mecha in the top right corner, find the podcast, you know what the art looks like, the very bright yellow cover, and then go to ratings and reviews and leave a rating. And if you want to leave some words as well, that'll be very kind as well. It really does mean a lot. Have a great day, week. This is actually the first podcast in this setup, and I hope the audio does sound okay and listenable for you guys. Hopefully there isn't too much change between what it was back then and now, so hoping that is okay, but have a great one, guys. I have been your host, Jamal, today, and this has been Get in the Mecca. The music in this production goes as follows. 8-bit title screen by Joth, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, and Difference by Chasers Gaming.